Welcome to Post Carbon Radio. I am your co-host, Karin Nyhus, and that was the voice of my co-host, Bing Gong. We are very excited to bring you a show today about the environment and the Amazon and changing the American dream. But I'm going to save the juicy details of who's with us until we give you a little bit of an update on some climate action and climate news. We haven't done the climate calendar for a while, but it's summer, and it's convention season, as everybody knows, unless you're living under a rock, and there's a connection to the organizing that's going on and what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to start out with a brief summary of some climate news and a calendar of upcoming events regarding the environment and climate change. So first, some news flashes in the environmental area. Bing, there was just a celebrity climate demo in Philadelphia. What was that?
I understand that there were 1,000 people there. I know one celebrity was Susan Sarandon.
Sarandon?
Yes, Sarandon. And they were pushing for more climate change action to get off fossil fuels by 2050.
We're doing this very last minute. I wasn't sure whether that was the same action because it was billed as a celebrity demo, but you were right. There were like 1,000 organizations there and from all 50 states. Mm-hmm. I heard a little coverage this morning said that, one organization, well, in general, they're calling for a national ban on fracking, right? There have been these victories lately, and now they want to take it national. So that's one message to the DNC. Calling out Hillary at the State Department because apparently she pressured Bulgaria to stop a ban on fracking, to tell Bulgaria, she was Secretary of State, to tell the Bulgaria to keep fracking.
We should also point out that in the National Republican Convention that Trump does not even recognize there is climate change.
Yeah, details, right? And in this demo yesterday, there was also a call for nuke-free, carbon-free. I think you're more on the nuclear track. Is that a new slogan?
No, I've always been interested in anti-nuclear activities.
You personally, but is that a new campaign as far as you know of? Anyway, yeah. Nuke-free, carbon-free was what I was hearing from the Nuclear Information and Resource Center. They highlighted the fact that in New York State, the governor has a so-called clean power plan, but it includes a $7.6 billion with a B dollar nuclear power bailout. So that would be a little bit contradictory. They were calling that out. There were indigenous groups present, and that relates very much to what we're talking about today. They were talking about their water quality, their air quality, their fish disappearing. There was a youth organizer with Rainforest Action Network who was just at PowerShift, and she was asked what her message to Hillary would be, and she said she wants Hillary to respond to the movement for Black Lives. So people are really drawing connections in this movement, and it's not just climate, it's really a climate justice message happening in Philadelphia as it gets really, really hot there and really humid. So I think it's kind of hard to ignore, even though it's weather, not climate, we know there's a link. And then last but not least, one thing that's been going on over the last few months is the Earth Guardians, and they were there in Philadelphia also. They're a youth group, and they've actually sued the federal government for not protecting their life and liberty, their rights to life and liberty for the next generation. And then, of course, more locally, Alameda County just last week became the first county in the Bay Area to ban fracking. So that's a victory and something people can feel really good about.
And I believe the city of Oakland has banned coal from coming into Oakland.
Okay. Yeah. People in the East Bay. And then we haven't talked about it on this show, but I think we should mention it, that there's a new film out called How to Let Go of the World, a film by Josh Fox, which is kind of another major tour de force. I haven't seen it, but I've seen previews and heard an interview.
Yeah, he made a great film on fracking.
Right. Gasland, So that one's at howtoletgomovie.com, and I think you can get it on some of the online streaming services. All right, so that's a little review and roundup on some of what's been happening very lately in the last week or so. In terms of upcoming, there's actually something tonight that I just saw from Occupy Forum. It's a field trip on sea level rise, flooding, and justice in the Bay Area. It's also billed as a policy workshop, so I'm not sure how much walking and how much talking. But that's tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. at the new Metro Center building in San Francisco. It's at 375 Beale Street at Harrison. So that's the only information I have. Again, sea level rise, flooding, and justice in the Bay Area workshop tonight at the new Metro Center building. Okay, this Sunday, the 31st, my hometown, Petaluma Progressive Festival. There will be, among others, many environmental organizations tabling. There'll be food, music, speakers, including Daniel Ellsberg, and performances, including, I'm very happy to say, the return of the San Francisco Mime Troupe, who, if you have not seen them, they do not do mime. They do political, musical, satirical comedy. They're great. And the event is free, so that's noon to 4 p.m. in downtown Petaluma. August 5th and 6th, do you want to tell us about Soil, Not Oil?
Yeah, that's a conference that includes Vandana Shiva, Fritjof Capra, Brock Dolman of the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center. He's a water expert. And Colin Bailey, Executive Director of Environmental Justice Coalition. Penny Livingston Stark of the Regenerative Design Institute in Bolinas. Paul Kaiser, award-winning no-till farmer from Singing Frog Farms.
And I see you can follow them on Twitter. They're at Soil Not Oil.
That's in Richmond. Do you know where it is taking place at? I think it's at the around the city offices, the city hall in Richmond, August 5th and 6th.
Yeah, coming right up. Mm-hmm. So that's in 2 weeks, or just under 2 weeks. I don't know the building, but you can find out more information at soilnotoilcoalition.org or on Facebook, Soil Not Oil Coalition. And there's just been a call put out for volunteers, so that's a way to attend for, it's either a free or reduced price, I'm not sure. I'm going to read you a laundry list. No, I'm not. They have a very long list of skills they need. It's everything from cooking to technical setup and breakdown, sound system. So you can contact them and find out about volunteer opportunities at soilnotoilcoalition.org/volunteer. There's a form you can fill out online. So that brings us to the end of our calendar and news update on climate. I'm sure listeners probably know all kinds of other stuff that we don't. Call us if you – actually, you can email us at postcarbon@earthlink.net if you have tips, things you want to put into the climate calendar for next time. All right. And now to our featured guest. Today, we're joined in studio by Lindsay Dyson. She is the volunteer program manager at the Pachamama Alliance, which some may know was co-founded by so-called economic hitman John Perkins. Today, we will not only be discussing the Alliance and their work, but also a bit about what's up with John Perkins and how requests from the shamans and other elders that you all work with at Pachamama Alliance in the Amazon are affecting your organization's, not only the direction, but how you organize your day-to-day work inside a small nonprofit. Pachamama Alliance have their offices in San Francisco at the Thoreau Center in the Presidio, and I understand that Pachamama has been growing, right?
I certainly have.
Yeah,
seen it.
Okay, and Lindsay Dyson is, as we said, the volunteer program manager at Pachamama Alliance. So, welcome, Lindsay, and thank you for coming into the studio today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself, and you know how you got involved with environmental issues, and how you got involved with the Pachamama Alliance in particular?
Well, I've always felt a deep connection to Mother Earth and what was happening around me. And I found out about Pachamama Alliance when I was invited to go to one of their big fundraising luncheons in about 2003, and I became a donor. And then in 2005, they introduced the Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream Symposium. And although I did not get a chance to attend the first symposium, I was invited to volunteer and support the production for the first facilitator training that they organized for that. And within 2 hours of the start of the training, I was declaring myself to be in it.
You were sold, huh?
I was there.
That's wonderful. And so since then, you've come to be on staff and really get deeply involved, huh?
Yeah. So I ended up being one of the first 15 facilitators trained. Helped put on some of the original large symposiums that we did in Oakland. And then as things started spreading out, I did small symposiums all over Sonoma County and Marin. And so there might be some people out there who've been in one of my symposiums.
Let's go back. Let's tell our listeners who don't know what Pachamama means. Could you give us a...
Pachamama is a South American, primarily Peruvian word that means Mother Earth, time, and all the universe. So it doesn't refer to Mother Earth as an entity so much as a space. You know, this is where we come from.
I think we don't have that concept, of course.
No. But it is the basis for a lot of the cosmology all across South America.
Yes. It's an interesting thing because it makes me realize, as you say it, that our language, the English language, has commodified time. It's something that we separate from space, right? And then we say that we can save it or spend it or waste it like it's a commodity. But this sounds like a very different...
Yeah, time is part of the universe. We just happen to count it in a different way, you know, in a very specific way.
Well, let's go on to tell us a little bit, what is Pachamama Alliance?
Well, Pachamama Alliance, as you know from John, he was working in South America, in Peru primarily, 20 years ago. And he was contacted by the tribe called the Achuar. And the Achuar were a dream culture. And they wake up at 3 or 4 o'clock every morning and review the dreams of the family and the tribe and decide what actions they're going to take and how they're going to live their day. And the shamans and the elders of the Achuar started having having dreams of the destruction of their world. And they kind of checked around the region and they found out what had happened in the northeast of Ecuador and saw that it was the forces of oil and mining extraction that were coming after them. And they did a very brave thing. They decided that they would reach out to the part of the world that was coming to destroy them to find partners to help prevent that. So John engineered a journey for, I think it was 8 or 10 people, to go down and meet with the shaman. And it involved, you know, taking a private plane, getting on a boat, hiking for half a day to get to this visit, this village. The Achuar had not been really in contact for a couple hundred years.
Did we mention that John Perkins was author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman? It was published when?
I think it was at least 8 or 10 years ago.
And it was a bestseller for 70
It was
weeks.
On the New York Times bestseller list.
I read it. I loved it.
He did a reading here 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and he has a new version of it, the new Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Mm-hmm. They talk about how all the practices of the economic hitman all over the world have kind of shifted from government work to private corporations. Mm-hmm. And he also writes a lot about Pachamama Alliance.
Yeah, and I think he was very remorseful for the work that he had done. So that's why he wants to help indigenous peoples to stop the actions of these corporations.
Yes, and he's still working down there. He still leads his own journeys separate from what Pachamama Alliance does. Mm-hmm. But his have more of a shamanic focus to them.
Oh. And you were telling me just a few minutes ago that you've taken a trip with the Alliance as well.
Oh, yes. It's one of the things Pachamama Alliance has a policy. When we have the budget and can do it, we send people that haven't been to Ecuador to go to the village, meet with the people, you know, and see what's at stake down there. Mm-hmm. All our journeys are just really about seeing what's at stake.
I know there are other nonprofits working with indigenous peoples and concerned about the Amazon, like Amazon Watch and Rainforest Action Network that you work with. How do you find your work different?
They're more concerned with what's wrong. You know, what damage is being done. They, in one way, they're like us in that they're helping the indigenous people get noticed and get them organized. But they're much about what's wrong and how to stop it. And we're much more about what the root is of the destruction, where it's coming from, and how the change has to really come from within people. That's what we call the dream of the modern world.
From within people, from within individuals?
Yeah.
Okay.
From with everyone, shall I talk about the dream of the modern world?
Sounds great.
Okay.
Say it again, what the symposia are called.
The symposium is called Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream. And it's now available online. You can do it in a couple hours if you go to our website. And you could also contact the Pachamama Alliance and have one come to your community. There's facilitators all over the world. We have over 4,500, 600 trained facilitators all over the planet. We're in 90 countries. We've been translated into 10 or 12 languages. So it connects the dots between environmental sustainability, social justice, and spiritual fulfillment. And it takes you on a journey from what's happening in the world now, what's the destruction, what's the situation in all three of those areas. What we say, how we got here. And one of the ways we got here is we've been in a trance, what Thomas Berry calls a trance. And we think we're separate from the rest of the world, from the rest of the universe, for that matter, and that we can do anything we want, and it won't have any effect on our surroundings.
We have these words, the environment.
Yes.
It's all the stuff that's not us.
Yes. Right? Yes, it's not us.
So we need to change the American dream.
Well, it's not as prominent in other countries. You know, we're driving a lot of the destruction, but so is China. Mm-hmm. You know, Europe's a little bit more green, but, you know, there's that whole middle ground, you know, like India.
Well, let's name it capitalism.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, it's capitalism.
Yes.
And so you were talking about Ecuador, and I just want to throw in that I went down to the Ecuadorian Amazon with Global Exchange. Are they still doing those tours?
Yes, they are.
Like a partner with you? Okay.
I wouldn't say they're a partner with us. We actually organize and lead our own journeys.
Right, okay. But let's get back. So Pachamama's work is focused in the Ecuadorian Amazon?
Yes. It's focused, as far as the indigenous people are concerned, it's focused on that area.
Okay.
You know, we have a total commitment to preserve the Amazon down there in perpetuity.
And you mentioned that because the political boundaries that the Europeans brought in under colonization don't correspond to the actual, you know, groups of people, that some of your work bleeds over into over borders of, is it Bolivia and Peru?
Yes, I think that those would be the two principal ones.
Okay. And you mentioned to me that the word Pachamama is a sacred word.
Yes. As I said, Pachamama means Mother Earth, time, and all the universe. So we don't just call ourselves Pachamama. We're Pachamama Alliance. We're the alliance for that value.
Thank you. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening. That was the voice of Lindsay Dyson. She's with Pachamama Alliance in San Francisco. And we're talking about her work and her organization's work both in the Amazonian rainforest of Ecuador, Bolivia, and Peru, and also around the world in 90 countries, giving symposia about, let's see if I can say it right, Awakening the Dreamer and Changing the Dream. Is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
So do you want to say a little more about what that comprises?
Well, first a little history. For the first 10 years that Pachamama Alliances was in existence, we only worked in South America. But the indigenous elders and the shamans kept telling us, we're not safe until you go home and change the dream of the modern world. As I mentioned, they're a dream culture. We don't work with our dreams. We're just embedded in them. You know, we live in it. So I think for the first few years that was happening, the people that founded Pachamama Alliance were going, what do they mean? What dream? You know, because they were in it too. And then somebody read Thomas Berry and found out about, he terms it the trance. And they, oh, that dream. You know? And in response to the fact that there had been no discussion of climate change in the previous two elections, they started working on creating the symposium in 2004 and had it ready for introduction by 2005.
We could say the American dream has turned into the American nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we could.
And who's the they who put this symposium together?
Well, primarily the co-founders. I don't think John was so much involved in the actual creation of the symposium, but Bill Twist, Lynn Twist.
And who are they?
Bill is a former, you know, corporate businessman. Lynn is famous as one of the most premier expert fundraisers on the planet. She worked for the Hunger Project for 20 years.
Okay.
And she actually ended up having to give up her job at the Hunger Project to get Pachamama Alliance going.
And then other founders you'd...
Those are the only three people that are co-founders in our terms.
Okay. Yeah. And you said there were...
Other people went on the trip.
Right,
the original journey.
Yeah.
But we're not so involved anymore.
Okay. So, getting back to changing the dream, mm-hmm. you said that they started working in the Amazon and the Achuar elders said, we're not going to be safe until you go home and change the dream. And so this symposium was put together.
Yes.
And now you said it's happening all over.
Correct.
And both online. Let's get your website out. What's the website people should go to?
www.pachamama.org.
And let's spell it out in case.
P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-A. Pachamama.
Great. So... Yeah, we talked a little bit about changing the dream, and is that the American dream, or is it something deeper? Do you want to make more comments on that? I mean, you mentioned the fact that part of our mythos, our the founding way that is so fundamental to our culture, I would say that we don't usually think or talk about it, is this notion that somehow we're separate from the rest of the universe.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's probably based in religion, going back a couple thousand years. Won't name any ones in particular, but it's you know, that there has to be a mediator between
the idea
you.
Of dominating nature.
Yeah, dominating than, nature, being the stewards, mm-hmm. having dominion over the animals, mm-hmm. all that stuff.
It's very interesting to me that you included in that list being stewards, because I think a lot of environmentalists consider that to be a positive thing, that we're stewards. What would your critique of that be?
That in the current translation of that, it's ownership of and the okay to do whatever you want with it, not necessarily take care of it.
Okay. So I'm going to pose a hypothetical parallel universe to you where... Bernie Sanders was not just shifted off to the side by the Democratic Party and he became president and he could do everything he said he was going to do. Would that be the equivalent of changing the dream, or where does that fall short in terms of America?
Well, it would be a good start. Let's put it that way, because it would be more socially just. Whether or not it would solve the spiritual malaise that has taken root in this country is a whole nother question. You know, perhaps when we started actually taking care of people, taking people care of their health, making sure we had more social justice, you know, that would start to heal that.
So would you call that, is it mainly a material change and a change in our material conditions? I heard a strong emphasis on the spirituality.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, we, as I said, environmental sustainability, social justice, and spiritual, we call it spiritual fulfillment, are all connected. Spiritual fulfillment also includes physical unwellness. And it is all connected. The subconscious awareness of what we're doing to the world is creating this illness inside of us that we don't even know about.
I understand this was just one person that attended one of your workshops, that you educate them about what's happening in the world and the collapse of ecosystems. She found it very heavy and disturbing. And how do you get people, you know, to act if they're numbed out or in panic mode?
Well, when the symposium first happened, it was long. Mm-hmm. It took like 8 hours to deliver all the information because people knew nothing about climate change or social justice, for that matter. And they did not connect those three things. So it took a long time to get through it, to bring people kind of up to speed. Now we can do it in a couple hours online. It's much more concise. It's much more positive in a way, because we see a lot more hopeful things going on in the world than we did 10 years ago. So the symposium takes you from what's happening now, how did we get here, you know, which we say is separation, and what you can do about it now. And we're much more engaged now than we were 10 years ago in what we can do about it now. You know, the Pachamama Alliance now puts people through an online course called the Game Changer Intensive, which creates online and live in-person local activists. And the two movements that we recommend are the Citizens Climate Lobby, because they know how to train volunteers to do their work, and Move to Amend, because we need to get, you know, all money out of politics. Mm-hmm. So that's who we're channeling people to right now.
350.org is...
350.org is another good one. There's so many good ones out there, you know. It was hard. The research was done for a couple of years before we got to where, okay, this is where we can send people, because we know they know how to train and use volunteers. So it's more about how they relate to their volunteers than just what they're doing.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Post Carbon Radio on KWMR, and we are joined in the studio today by Lindsay Dyson, who is the volunteer program manager at Pachamama Alliance, who have their offices in San Francisco and the Thoreau Center in the Presidio, and work all over the world, both in the Amazon rainforest and also in 90 countries around the world, training activists. And we were just talking about where those activists end up getting involved once they've gone through this Changing the Dream, challenging...
Game Changer Intensive.
Game Changer Intensive.
Yeah, and that's an online course. It's available to anybody.
Great.
And they don't all go into those. A lot of them become activists on a local level. So they start doing symposiums and, you know, creating other actions in their own location.
Is that little different than the volunteers that you're facilitating?
Yes, completely separate.
Uh-huh. Tell us, what do you need volunteers to do if I were interested in helping out?
Primarily, the volunteers that I work with are interns who are college students or, you know, returning adults who want to actually learn what it's like, experience what it's like to work in an alternative, progressive nonprofit, and how we raise our funds and how we create our websites and supporting the people in the Game Changer Intensive. So we typically have anywhere from 4 to 6 interns in our office.
I see.
That reminds me, talking about how you do things in your office, when you and I met, you told me that there were some changes happening in terms of how you organize your own work in the organization. And what is that? What's going on that you can talk about? And does it relate to Changing the Dream?
Oh, I think it relates to Changing the Dream because we have transitioned from being a hierarchical organization, you know, where the CEO and the executive team had the final say in how they were going to do things. And now it's a team-managed organization. Of course, we still have a CEO. Bill still is the public face of Pachamama Alliance in Ecuador because he's been around the longest. But the organization is now broken up into teams, which used to be called departments. And each department sets their own goals, creates their own job titles, and figures out how they're going to accomplish what they need to accomplish, and it's working beautifully. It's been about a year and a half that we declared ourselves to be this type of organization at a team retreat in January of 2015. And now, and then this year we reaffirmed that. You know, we'd been figuring it out for a year, and then finally at the beginning of this year we said, now we're doing it. We're really doing it.
And where did it come from? Was it affected by the communities in the Amazon and the work you're doing there? Or where did this idea come from?
It came from the team itself.
Okay.
You know, from people that are concerned about social justice and equity within the team. We all are to some degree, but some of them were, you know, kind of grading against the hierarchy, and they saw that things could happen in a faster way if the teams could take their own responsibility for the work.
Be the work you want to see.
Be the work you want to see.
Leader. Yes. You know, self-motivating.
Yeah. Yes. And one of the retreats that we did, we had a facilitator, Henry Kinseyhaus, who trains coaches, and he has a really interesting model for leadership, where we tend to think in capitalism and in our society that leaders always lead from the front. But Henry demonstrated to us that you can lead from the behind, you can lead from the side, you can lead from the front, but you can also lead from the field, you know, by looking over at everything that's happening.
Well, I think Bernie Sanders' campaign is a movement from the bottom.
Yeah.
Up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's hopefully pushing Hillary more progressively.
Well, and there was some indication that Obama's original campaign, that huge, you know, grassroots campaign that he got going.
Yes.
First, you know, but didn't stick.
What I find interesting about it is that I hear you saying that you've become less hierarchical as you've grown.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience with organizations is that they become more hierarchical when they grow. So it makes me wonder, is this an artifact? I mean, sorry, not an artifact, because you did it very deliberately. But was it enabled by modern technology in any way? Or why do you think it was able to happen for you now? So many nonprofits have existed at your scale. Why have they grown into hierarchy and you grew out of it?
Well, Pachamama, total number of employees has gone from 10 up to 30, and now we're back down to 17.
Okay.
So we're lean and effective now. And it's come out of that we're very specific in how we hire people. They have to be totally committed to the mission of Pachamama Alliance. We don't hire anyone that just wants to come and work for us casually. And so the people that we have now are there for their lives, the life of the planet.
That's profound. I don't know many nonprofits that do that. How do you figure that out, if someone's sincere or not?
Long interviews?
Yeah.
We require a cover letter and a resume and a Skype, you know, an online. You know, we run people through a lot of hoops.
So in terms of the reorganization of your work to be sort of more autonomous modules, I'll call them, and using mm-hmm. technocratic language. How's that working? How is that changing the day-to-day? What does it feel like? It sounded like you said it made you more effective. Are there other effects in terms of camaraderie or how it feels to be in the office?
Oh, it's made a huge difference. All meetings now are alternative, you know, rotating staff organize them. We set the agendas. The engagement team, the community building team, has just generated enormous results over the past year and a half out of being able to do it as they envision it.
Mm.
And the web team has also, and the marketing communications team, I shouldn't just call them the web team, they've created a huge results in terms of upgrading the website, putting things online. You know, it's really made a difference. We might as well say that the book that we started with was called, let me see, where did I put it? Oh, I don't remember. It's Reinventing Organizations.
Okay, that was a philosophy that underlay your reorg?
Yeah, it's a book.
Okay. What's interesting to me about that is because I work in technology for nonprofits, that it sounds like it was to some degree enabled, right? You're using social media and online communications and the web, but that the way you did it was to give people who really knew, had a strategic vision around that, you gave them the power to run with it. Is that accurate?
Exactly. Yes. And it finally became clear that, you know, top down, somebody setting a goal for somebody else and saying, this is what you're going to do this year, doesn't really work.
Because you're not invested in it. You don't want to do it.
Well,
is that right?
Yeah. You're just not as passionate about it. You could be arguing about it in your head, but because it's a hierarchy, you're not going to say yes or no. You're just going to go out and try to get it done.
Well, that's what we say in community organizing, too, right? That you want people involved in deciding what the goal is from the very beginning, from the very first meeting. You don't do set your goals and then outreach to other people that that doesn't work, right?
Right. Not anymore.
Yeah.
If it ever did.
Okay. Any other comments on how this changed organization is affecting your work and your feeling about being at work and the people who come and work with you?
Well, it's just that there's more commitment in the office. There's more commitment to the work, you know, because the people that are there really want to be there, and they really want to do what they say they're going to do. It becomes an issue of integrity.
I see that you do a musical storytelling.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how, how do you tell a story through a series of songs?
Well, I've as long been interested in how rock and roll music has changed over the years. It used to be very political, and you could tell present a political rock ethic, as I call it, which is all about peace, love, and understanding. So when we created the symposium 10 years ago, I actually created a 2-CD set that's Awakening the Dreamer. It's all rock and roll songs and Changing the Dream. It's rock and roll songs mixed with shamanic music and flute music and things like that. So it you can actually see the shift in the lyrics and in the music, too. So that's one of the ways I do it.
And so you made CDs out of it, but we were talking about your many roles in radio in your previous career, but you weren't on air.
Right.
Is this something that you've thought about bringing on air, or is it can it be a performance piece, or how else could it be delivered?
It could be delivered in a lot of different ways. Primarily I think it could be a radio program, because you could do it episodically and tackle different topics, different subjects from week to week. And people could, you know, call in and say, oh, you should play this song because that's about that. Because it's all in there. It's all in there.
It's funny this should come up right now, but because for some reason I was having 70s nostalgia or something the other day, and I started looking up 70s love songs, because a lot of them were sappy and a lot of them were romantic love. I mean, they're different kinds of love, right? But still, there were a lot of songs in the 70s about love, and I'm not very tuned into pop music, I have to admit, and that started some time ago. But it feels to me like there isn't as much of that now, and I wonder how that, you know, connects to your talking about the music not having the same rock ethic.
Well,
I mean, love
the,
isn't there, right?
Most of the music is just about romance.
Yeah.
You know? And it's... You know, what I used to say, my baby done left me, now I'm so blue songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it very seldom has a topic any bigger than that.
And what kinds of love would be the peace, love, and understanding in the rock ethic that you're talking
well,
about?
Well, it's more what you would consider universal love or unconditional love. Love of the planet, you know, love of life, love of family. You know, it would expand the whole notion of love.
And so if someone wanted to do a party or an event with that sort of music, how would they contact you? Would that be right to go through the Pachamama Alliance?
Oh, I'm sure it would be okay with them.
Okay. So back to Pachamama Alliance, are there examples you want to talk about of how people are changing the dream, either here or in other countries?
Well, the list goes on. You know, it's the whole alternative power movement in Europe and in this country. It's kind of strange, you know, the paradox of China, where they're destroying the world almost as fast as they're trying to clean it up. They love the symposium there. We've done multiple symposiums, many symposiums. We just did a facilitator training to train other facilitators. So they're just taking it on. They're just running with it. We can't even track it, you know. So it's all over the place. There's an organization called Brahma Kumaris, which is considered a religious sect. It's from out of India. They have 100, you know, churches all over the world, and they do the symposium.
So it's not really a first world phenomenon.
No.
The popularity of your trainings.
No.
You said people can go to your website and take a course.
Yes. Just look for learn the tab on the top of the homepage that says learn and engage.
And that's at pachamama.org.
Yes. And that will give you access to the symposium and to the community building and to the Game Changer Intensive. It's all there.
Great. Well, as we move to wrap up, Lindsay Dyson with the Pachamama Alliance, is there anything else that you wanted to make sure we covered before we close it up? We've covered quite a bit of ground.
I think we have covered quite a bit of ground. And there's a lot of people in Marin and Sonoma County that, you know, have already been trained or facilitators or been in symposiums. And they'd be happy to get involved again if new things were happening.
Okay, so you've got a network of speakers and facilitators. How about if somebody hasn't gotten involved and they can do the training online. You were talking to me, you have internships coming up for students?
Yes. I have an internship that's open right now for a really committed person to learn our fundraising model and be involved in the production of our 20th anniversary fall gala.
All right. Great. Well, thank you so much. Our guest has been Lindsay Dyson of the Pachamama Alliance in San Francisco. And Lindsay, thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
It's been my honor and privilege.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Bing, I think you had a little bit of a separate subject you wanted to cover today.
Yeah. I've been cooking up a roundtable discussion for our next program on Monday, August 8th at 1 p.m. It's going to be on the subject of our aging population. And as we know, baby boomers are becoming more and more part of the demographics. And a lot of elders are coming together around raising consciousness and forming what they call a climate elders network to push for changing the culture, since we're going to have more of an impact on as voters. They formed a couple years ago, a group came together in Burlingame to talk about how the elders, they can engage more elders. And I see a lot of elder salons are being formed now for elders to support themselves and to actually bring out the gifts that elders have. We live in a culture of ageism, right?
Absolutely.
Elders are kind of pushed aside, warehoused, as they say. There is a group of elders that I've been in contact that really see that elderhood is really a new stage of life. We're living longer. We have Social Security. We have the time. And a lot of us came from the 70s. We were very idealistic and thought we could change the culture. Well, maybe there are enough of us around where we can really make an impact. We call it growing an elder culture or community. And so this program is going to be about aging and what is conscious elderhood and how do we distinguish between an elder and an older person. I have a friend who's going to be on the program, David Lucky Goff. He's a prolific writer and visionary, I feel, because he's interested in developmental psychology. We know the stages of development: adolescence, adulthood, middle age, and so forth. Now that there are more of us elders, this is a new stage, really. So he calls this stage grandolescence, being grandfathers, grandmothers, and so forth. This is a new stage that we're exploring and actually seeing if we can evolve further than we have, because we need to, first of all. So one of the subjects will probably be the role of elders on a threatened planet and the urgency in the face of near-term human extinction. Let's face it. We'll also be the people, be Kurt Kuval, who is a universalist, Unitarian Universalist community minister, who I met on the climate train going to New York.
Which community?
Berkeley. He lives in Berkeley in Oakland, East Bay. He works with Black Lives Matter and really is a social justice activist as well as climate change. And he'll be my co-host. I think he turned 73. I'll be 78 in October. So I've just really acknowledged that I'm part of this growing demographic. And what can I do? I've always been an activist. And I think we need to let elders know that there is work they can do with their experience and their life experience and the hardships that they evolve. I think we, in this culture, don't have the respect for elders that indigenous cultures have had.
Right.
And so we really need to grow that elder. So, and my friend Lucky Goff, who lives in Sebastopol, he and Alexandra Hart formed a elder salon about 6 years ago in Sebastopol that's been meeting monthly. And he and Alexandra have written a book called The Age of Actualization, a handbook for growing elder culture. So if you're interested in forming an elder support group, it's a great book because they tell about their process and what worked and what didn't work.
So this this show you're doing is within the context of this larger elder movement, but it's specifically about climate change. Is that right?
Well, not specifically, but there's social justice and all of that ways that elders could impact the culture. And I just want to promote a couple of events. Also in the studio, we'll be joined by Constance Washburn, who is done work, Joanna Macy's work, Reconnecting, and she is involved with this Conscious Elder Network, and she's got an event that she is putting on Sunday, July 31st from 3 to 6 p.m. at the San Geronimo Valley Community Center. That's Sunday, July 31st from 3 to 6 p.m., at the San Geronimo Valley Community Center, and it's on Conscious Elder Network introductory event. You're invited to a community gathering to explore together what it means for each of us to engage in our world as a conscious elder, how we can offer our multiple talents and resources in the service of preserving and protecting life for all generations to come. This is an interactive event where you will have the opportunity to meet some of the founding members of the Conscious Elder Network and other like-minded elders and share your stories, your passions, and your visions for a healthy, just, and sustainable world for all. And let me just say a few more about things about our program. So we'll have Kurt Kuval will be my co-host. We'll be in the studio with Constance Washburn, and we'll be on the phone. We'll have John Sorensen, who is a co-founder of the Conscious Elder Network, and David Lucky Goff. We hope you'll listen to us on Monday, August 8th at 1 p.m.
That's a very impressive lineup, Bing. Mm-hmm. You're going to be busy. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of material to cover in an hour. Maybe we'll have more shows, because I don't think there's a specific program devoted toward conscious elderhood.
You mean in post-carbon or in...
Well, maybe we'll have a few programs.
Sounds like it.
Relating to how we can engage and play a role
Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's next week on Post Carbon Radio. Sorry, not next week, in 2 weeks.
Yes.
So that, do you have the date on that?
August 8th.
August 8th, thank you. 1 p.m. All right. Well, that, I think, makes the end of Post Carbon for today.
Yep.
Thank you so much for listening, and tune in again on August 8th.
I'm trying to spread the word about this immense issue, but I find it absurd why so many people are confused. Some people don't understand the weight of this problem. Act now before it gets out of hand, cause Earth is calling. I was 10 years old, exposed to it. The inconvenient truth really made me concerned how it was going to affect the youth. The temp is still rising from the pollution we produce. We need to start striving for a solution to reduce. When we burn fossil fuels like coal and gasoline, we're using dirty energies when we should be using clean. When we burn, we're adding to the greenhouse effect. CO2, CH4, and N2O collect in our atmosphere. They remain up there for years and years, absorbing sun rays that come near. But we need to persevere, cause this makes our planet's temp rise fast. So why can't we find a way to cut back on our greenhouse gas? We have waited too long. Act now before the moment's gone. The situation's tough, but stay strong until we see the dawn.
The climate's on my mind. The climate's on my mind. Climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind, the climate's on my mind, the climate.